ते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवतीरुत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिके कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नंदनाय च नंदगोपकुमाराय गोविंदाय नमो नमः। ओम ज्ञानतमिरंदस्य ज्ञानांजन शलाकया चक्षुरोन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः। श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं तदाति स्वपदांतिकं वंदेहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातां सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितं तां सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजना सहितं कृष्ण चैतन्य देवं श्री राधा कृष्ण पदान् सहगणा ललिता श्री विशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्णा करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामो राम रामो हरे हरे। Here at the end of the second canto, second chapter. Thirty-fifth verse, na? I'll just do a brief recap of the the chapter and then we'll proceed. So at the end of the first canto, Parishit Maharaj ask the question that what should a person hear, chant and remember, and what one should not hear, chant and remember, what a person should do and what a person should not do at the time of death. So Shukadev Goswami began the second chapter by glorifying the question of Parishit Maharaj, Variyan Yeshate Prashna Krita Loka Kritam Nripa Atmavit Samata Pumsam Shota Vyadishu Yahaparaha. He glorified the question of Parishit Maharaj, and then first he explained what a person should not do by describing the materialistic person, by describing the activities of a materialistic person, by describing what a materialistic person is absorbed in and how the materialistic person is not alert to the real problems of life. Pashyan apina pashyati. Absorption, alertness and activities. He described the absorption, alertness and activities of a materialistic person. And then after describing what a person should not do, then he described what a person should do. Tasmat Bharata Sarvatma Bhagavan Ishwaro Hari Shrotavya Kirtitavyascha Smartavyascha Ichyata Bayam. So he described how a person should hear, chant and remember the glories of the Lord. Then after describing that, then he said that even the transcendentalists, even the self-realized souls, they are also attracted to hearing the glories of the Lord. Prayena munaya rojan nivritya vidishayadata. Even the topmost transcendentalists, for above the, all the rules and regulations, even they take pleasure in glorifying the activities of the Lord. And then he gave his own example, that I was actually a self-realized, but still I became attracted to the glories of the Lord described in Srimad Bhagavatam. And then Shukadev Goswami said that even I was attracted to the process of bhakti. And what is the chief anga of the process of bhakti that he described in the 11th verse? The chief item, chief anga of the process of bhakti is chanting the holy names of the Lord, Harer Nama and Kirtanam. Then after that, when he described the chief anga is the chanting of the holy names, then Parishit Maharaj was feeling that I have only 7 days to live. Will I be able to attain perfection by practicing bhakti? So that was the concern in the mind of Parishit Maharaj. So at that time, Shukadev Goswami gave the example of Katvanga Maharaj, who attained perfection in one moment. And then after giving the example of Katvanga Maharaj, then Shukadev Goswami, from the 15th verse, he gives the opinion of the Bhakti Mishra Yogis. So he is addressing the question of what a person who is about to die, what a person should do. So he is giving the opinion of the some of the sages present in the assembly. So therefore he is recommending the path of Bhakti Mishra Yoga, devotional service mixed with the process of Ashtanga Yoga. So he described the 8 limbs of Ashtanga Yoga, from Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama. And then he described Dharana, Dhyana, and then a person Dharana, Dhyana and Samadhi. Then a person completes the process of Bhakti Mishra Yoga when a person sees the Paramatma. So that is how he completed. Then Parikshit Maharaj asked 3 questions. How is the Dharana accomplished? And what is the suitable object of concentration while doing Dharana? And how a person can quickly get rid of the contaminations in the mind? So then Shukadev Goswami described that when a person is doing Dharana, that is meditation, that first a person, if a person has a lot of impurities, first a person should meditate upon the universal form of the Lord. And then when a person gets purified, then he can actually meditate on the Paramatma form of the Lord. So therefore he describes as a Dharana Ashraya, that is the object of meditation, the stage of Dharana, he describes the universal form of the Lord from the, I think, the 19th or 20th verse onwards. He describes the universal form of the Lord, and he gives the description of the different universal form. That is how the rest of the chapter proceeds, the first chapter. And then in the second chapter, he begins the second chapter by giving an example of a person who practiced meditation on the universal form of the Lord and how he attained perfection. So he began by giving the example of Lord Brahma, how by meditating on the universal form, how he regained his memory of how to create. Then after, with that he begins the second chapter. After beginning like that, then in the second verse, Shukadeva Goswami, he rejects the path of Karma Kanda, which is the opinion of some of the sages present in the assembly. Some of the sages, their opinion is that one should practice Karma Kanda. So Shukadeva Goswami condemns the path of Karma Kanda from the second verse onwards. So he says that one should reject the path of Karma Kanda, and the conditioned souls hover in dreams of such heavenly illusory pleasures, but actually they do not relish any tangible happiness in such places. After rejecting the path of Karma Kanda, Shukadeva Goswami says that one should not work hard for actually material sense gratification. One should actually accept whatever is necessary to maintain. One should accept the minimum necessities of life while living in this world, and one should actually focus his mind on he should be intelligently fixed and never endeavor for unwanted things. So one should accept the minimum necessities of life, and one should not endeavor to follow the path of Karma Kanda. So then the fourth and fifth verse, he describes like what is the lifestyle of a person who is living with the minimum necessities. He describes that how chirani kim patina santi, that what is the need of a pillow when you have your own arms to with which you can actually sleep, and what is the need of in the forest one can just drink some water and then quench one's thirst, one can eat the fruits and roots and one quench one's hunger. So like that he describes that kind of lifestyle. Then in the sixth verse, he described that how a person should render service to the super soul situated in one's own heart by his omnipotency. Because he is the ultimate personality, almighty personality of Godhead, eternal and unlimited, he is the ultimate goal of life, and by worshipping him, one can end the cause of the conditioned state of existence. Huh. So in the sixth verse, second chapter, na? Yeah. So in this way, after rejecting the path of Karma Kanda, Shukadeva Goswami is coming to the point of evam sva chitte, fixing the mind on the super soul. So in the first chapter, he described the dharanashraya of an impure yogi. For a person who is still impure, he described the dharanashraya, one should meditate on the universal form. So now he is coming back to that same topic. In between, in the beginning of the second chapter, he rejected the path of Karma Kanda. Then after that, he is again coming back to the topic of for an advanced yogi who has become purified, he should meditate upon the super soul. So therefore, from the sixth verse onwards, he is saying that an yogi should actually worship the super soul. And then he describes who else but the gross materialist will reject the path of liberation and choose Karma Kanda. So he is again condemning the path of Karma Kanda, and one should choose this path of liberation, and one should meditate upon the super soul. And thereafter, from the 8th verse onwards, he gives a description of the super soul. After giving a description of the super soul, then he further says that this Paramatma meditation is for the unattached yogi, but for the attached yogi, he should meditate upon the universal form. So he again emphasizes that. And then after that he says that for a person who meditates upon the super soul, and when the yogi has become advanced, what is the process of leaving from this world for the advanced yogi? So he describes the process of leaving from this world and directly achieving liberation. So he describes the path of Shat Chakra Yoga, how rising the life here through the different life years, and then to the different chakras in the body, and then when the life year leaves from the Brahma Rantra, and then he actually attains liberation. So this is the process of leaving one's body of an advanced yogi. And suppose if the yogi is not advanced, if he still has desire to go to some other planets and to see that what is the life, what sort of life is there in other planets, then for such a person, Shukadeva Goswami describes the path of Krama Mukti or gradual liberation. So he also attains liberation after going through different stoppages, after going through different planets. So that he describes from the 22nd verse onwards. So verse number 15 to 21 is the path of the practice and the process of living of an advanced yogi, direct liberation, that is when the life here leaves from the Brahma Rantra. So there are 9 holes in the body. From the 9 holes, the 2 holes, rectum and the anus, they are considered inferior. If the life here leaves from the Brahma Rantra, then a person attains liberation. But if the... one who focuses on the Paramatma is an advanced yogi.
And he only leaves the body by Shat Chakra Yoga. Liberation achieved, he is Shat Chakra Yoga, is another yogi, some other yogi.
After meditating on the Paramatma, if he wants to attain direct liberation, then he leaves, he follows the path of Shat Chakra Yoga, and then the life here leaves from the Brahma Rantra and he attains liberation. And suppose if he still has desires, we still have desires to go to some other planets to see what the life is about, then he practices Krama Mukti. Krama Mukti, it is a gradual liberation where a person goes to different planetary systems and then ultimately attains liberation.
Those who are concentrating on Paramatma, for him, that Shat Chakra Yoga is the path for liberation. It is given that he attains Brahman, and after that Shat Chakra Yoga is shown in the diagram. So after Brahman realization, he goes to Shat Chakra Yoga. That is confusing. That's why I'm asking. So the chart is there.
Acha.
That is confusing.
Yeah.
That
show me. Yeah. Okay. So after the samadhi, he attains Brahman liberation, realization, and then he practices Shat Chakra Yoga. And then, after Shat Chakra Yoga, he attains liberation. So you are asking that Brahman realization is equivalent to liberation, then if you read the verses, The Brahman realization that refers to the stage of Labdhopashanti, the verse number 17, the stage of Labdhopashanti that is described as Brahman realization. So we can say that even while having that body, he attains a stage of Brahman realization, but then actually the soul goes to the liberation, in the sense that he goes to the emerges into the Brahman platform, he goes beyond the material world. Like, while living in this world, he attains the Brahman realization, and then he leaves the life here, and the life here goes beyond the material realm and goes to the spiritual realm, and that is by Shat Chakra Yoga. So that's how he goes. I think water is coming. Maybe we can. Udhar bhi gir raha hai na? Like in the Vaishnava conception, the stage of, in one sense, liberation, it is there even while living in the body. Iha yasya harer dasya karmana manasagira nikila sap yavastasu jivan muktasa uchyate. So Rupa Goswami says that if a person's mind, body and words are engaged in the service of the Lord, then a person is considered to be a jivan mukta even while living in this world. So in that sense, and to have more technically, when a person lives beyond the material world, when the living entity goes beyond the material world, that he goes to the spiritual realm. So that is like, he goes to the spiritual realm, that is also liberation. But even while living in this world, if a person gets that realization, so that is also considered like a liberated stage also. So that is one of the difference between the Abrahamic religion and the Vedic religion. In the Abrahamic religion, they say that there is a judgment day. Only on the judgment day, then you will attain liberation. When you accept Jesus as the Savior, then on the judgment day, then you'll go to the heaven, then you will attain this one. But in the Vedanta scriptures, that even while living in this world, a person becomes liberated. So like that. So then the path of Krama Mukti is described for a person who still has material desires, who wants to go to different planets. Like for him, how he goes through different planetary systems. I think this is described in the diagram, Vaishvanara Loka, Sishumara Loka, Mahara Loka, Brahma Loka, and then he pierces the five coverings of earth, water, fire, air, ether, which are successively 10 times more, and then he pierces through the coverings of false ego in Mahatattva, and then Pradhana, and then he attains liberation. So having described that, then Shukadeva Goswami says that both these paths, the path of direct liberation and the path of gradual liberation, Krama Mukti, they have been described in the scriptures. And then after that, he gives the opinion of, he is going to give his own opinion about the process of bhakti. Although he mentioned this, the first chapter, 5th verse, Tasmat Bharata Sarvatma. And then after describing that, then he started describing the Bhakti Mishra Yoga, which is the opinion of some of the sages. But now, at the end of the 2nd chapter, he is giving his own opinion what a person should practice. So that is what he explains in the 33rd verse. Nakhyatonya Shiva Panta विशत संस्कृताविह वासुदेवे भगवति भक्ति योगो यतो भवेत. फॉर दोस हु आर वैंडरिंग द मटेरियल एग्जिस्टेंस देर इज नो मोर ऑस्पिशियस मीन्स ऑफ डिलीवरेंस दैन दट इज एम्ड एट डायरेक्ट डिवोशनल सर्विस टू कृष्ण. There is, this is the most auspicious path, like that he explains. And then he says that this has been, this is the conclusion of Lord Brahma himself. Bhagavan Brahma Kasyena. He studied the Vedas 3 times and then came to this conclusion that developing attraction towards the Lord is the ultimate goal of life. Or this verse can mean that Vishnu Chakotaku says that the Supreme Lord who actually appeared, who took the incarnation of a sage, he studied the Vedas 3 times, like any sage going through the scriptures again and again. And then he came to the conclusion, Ratir Atman Yato Bhavet. Devotional service is the should be the ultimate goal. Now, 35th verse. Bhagavan Sarva Bhuteshu लक्षित स्वात्मना हरिहि दृश्यैर् बुद्ध्यादिभिर् द्रष्टा लक्षणैर् अनुमापकै.
द पर्सनालिटी ऑफ गॉडहेड लॉर्ड श्री कृष्णा इज इन एवरी लिविंग बीइंग अलोंग विद द इंडिविजुअल सोल एंड दिस फैक्ट इज परस्यूड एंड हाइपोथेसाइज इन अवर एक्ट्स ऑफ सीइंग एंड टेकिंग हेल्प फ्रॉम द इंटेलिजेंस.
So in the previous verse, Sukadeva Goswami ended the verse by saying, Ratir Atman Yato Bhavet. Ratir Atman Yato Bhavet. One should develop Rati for the Supreme Lord. That is the actually, that is the conclusion of, after studying the Vedas. So now, so this Rati for the Supreme Lord is of 5 types. Shantarati, Dasyarati, Sakya, Vatsalya and Madhurya. So in this verse, according to Vishnu Chakotakur, he says that Sukadeva Goswami explains the shelter of one who is having Shantarati. In Shantarati, a person actually meditates on the Paramatma within the heart. The shelter of a person in Shantarati, that is actually Paramatma, who is situated in the everyone's heart. So that is explained here. Bhagavan Sarva Bhuteshu. The personality of Goddess Sri Krishna is in every living being. And this fact is perceived and hypothesized in our acts of seeing and taking help from the intelligence. So basically Sukadeva Goswami, this verse is also quoted and this comes in the Uddhava Gita purport also, and also in Akrura's prayer also it comes. So basically this verse talks about the process of surmising the presence of the Lord through meditative introspection. So through meditative introspection, we can perceive the, one can infer the presence of the super soul within everyone's heart. So that is why the word anumapakai means using anuman by inferring through meditative introspection. So Bhagavan Sarva Bhuteshu Lakshita Swatmana Hari. Lakshita Swatmana, that means a Shanta Bhakta, one who is having Shantarati, he sees the Supreme Lord situated in Sarva Bhuteshu, in all living entities, Swatmana Harihi, by the mercy of the Lord. So Prabhupada writes in that purport that actually the Lord is not perceivable by our present materialized senses, but whom one is convinced of the presence of the Lord by a practical service attitude. There is a revelation by the Lord's mercy. So there he is writing that Swatmana Hari means by the mercy of the Lord, by a practical service attitude, Lord reveals, and such a pure devotee can perceive the Lord's presence always and everywhere. And the second line he says, Drishyair Buddhi Adibir Drashta Lakshanair Anumapakai. So that means that through the process of inference, by Anuman, one can infer the presence of the living entity and the super soul. the living entity and the super soul, can their presence can be inferred by buddhi adibir, by the symptoms such as their observable intelligence. So, like, what we are understanding here is that if you read the Prabhupada's purport, Prabhupada elaborately explains that, how we can understand the presence of the soul by using introspection. So, there are different levels of knowledge. For example, one category of knowledge can be understood immediately. Design implies a designer. So on first hearing itself, we can accept. Or design means there must be a designer. And there are second category of knowledge, which we can understand after doing certain deliberation. After doing some deliberation, for example, here I am not the body. So here he is saying that anumapaka means after doing some deliberation, after doing some introspection, we can understand the presence of the soul. So we can understand that how our body has been changing, but still we claim ourselves to be the same person. That means we must be different from the body. By using some inference, we can understand the presence of the soul. And another category of knowledge, which can be understood only after a certain level of purification. So that is Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, which can be accepted only after a certain level of purification. We can appreciate that. And a certain level of knowledge, fourth level of knowledge, is that we can understand only, that we cannot understand even in this world, even in this lifetime. Say, for example, so different dimensions of the planetary systems. So Prabhupada writes that you can neither prove this nor you can disprove. So maybe you will be able to, only after when you go to that particular place, then you can actually, not in this lifetime, you cannot actually realize that. You just have to accept on the basis of the scriptures. So only when you go to that place, you can actually understand. So here, in this verse, what he is saying is that we can infer the presence of the soul and the super soul. Both can be inferred by seeing the symptoms of taking help from the intelligence. So Prabhupada in the purport, he explains that by the little use of intelligence, we can also readily agree that the living being who sees the things beyond himself by ordinary vision has no power to see or to move independently. So how he writes is that, he says that, we always say that, I am, in the Gita course, we tell in the beginning, through common sense, we understand we are not the body, we are the soul. We always say that my body, my hand, so that means this body belongs to us. There is a person to whom it belongs. So by that we can understand the real self is different from the body. And also, Prabhupada is saying that how we are not independent in regards to using our different senses, and how we are not independent in regards to enjoying the different sense objects. The sense objects are provided by the material nature, provided by the Lord. So the fact that we are not independent, from that we can understand that these all have been provided. So there is a superior intelligence who is actually directing. So by that, Prabhupada is saying that there is a super soul behind everyone. And also Prabhupada explains, or Vishnu Chakravarti says, that some living entities, different living entities may perform the same activities, but some living entities get some results, some other living entities get different results. Some living entities, the antaryami is inferred by certain qualities which define him. All the jivas are dependent in their enjoying and acting, and even if they do the same activity, there are differing results for differing jivas. and sometimes no results for some jivas. So thus the symptoms of the living entity will vary. So the jiva, a doer and controlled, is like a carpenter king, because he gets proportionate results as allotted by his master and sometimes no results, since he is not independent. So this is the point he is explaining to infer the presence of the super soul. Same different living entities are doing the same activity, but different people get different results. They may be putting the same effort, but they are getting different results. So that means those results are given by somebody. They are not independent. If they are independent, all of them should get the same result. The fact that they are getting different results, that means like they are dependent on a superior force. So by that we can infer the presence of the super soul. So that's what Vishnu Chakravarti says. So basically we can infer the presence of the super soul by understanding how we are not independent in getting the results. And we can also infer the presence of the soul. By proper deliberation, that how we are different from the body. Although the body is changing, but the soul within this is the same, because we always say we are the same person. So in this way, this is the point of this verse. In the Uddhava Gita, the 11th canto, and Krishna is saying, 11.7.23, Atramam mrigayantyadda yukta hetubi reshwaram grihyamanair gunair lingair agrahyam anumanataha. So in this verse, Krishna is saying, by engaging in bhakti, engaged in bhakti, the devotees search for me directly by the processes like hearing and chanting. So he says that by engaging in the process of hearing and chanting, one can actually, one can come in contact with the Supreme Personality of God. But, and then Krishna says, grihyamanair gunair lingair agrahyam anumanataha. Agrahyam means I cannot be attained. Agrahyam means I cannot be attained by what? Anumanataha. But I am not attained by anuman, by inference. So that means what Krishna is saying here is that super soul can be perceived through inference, through anuman. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be attained by inference. So Krishna says that I cannot be attained by inference using the intelligence and various indicators. But the Antaryami, who is actually the super soul, who is actually instigating the living entity, that super soul can be inferred by inference through anuman. So that means in order to realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he cannot be attained by anumana praman. He can be attained only by his own mercy when he reveals himself. And when will the Lord reveal himself? That when we practice the process of devotional service, which is the direct process of attaining the Lord. Atrama mrigayanti adda. Adda means directly. Some devotees search for me directly by hearing and chanting. So Prabhupada mentions this in this purport also. If you read in the last paragraph of the purport, Prabhupada says that realization of the super self by the individual self is the beginning of self-realization. And the last paragraph in the middle, and by the process of such self-realization, one is able to realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead by intelligence, by the help of authorized scriptures, and principally by the grace of the Lord. So he is highlighting here, to realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you definitely, principally you need the grace of the Lord. But you can infer the presence of the super soul through inference, through anuman. So using intelligence. So that means that with the help of higher intelligence, which is given by the Lord, we can understand the presence of the soul and the super soul. we can infer the presence of the soul and the super soul. But to realize the personality of Godhead, we cannot understand simply by our own intelligence. We have to practice the process of devotional service and get the grace of the Lord, and then only we can attain. So Prabhupada is again highlighting at the end of the purport. So if we stick to our determination and pray for the mercy of the director of the intelligence sitting within the same bodily tree, like a bird sitting within another tree, certainly the purport of the revealed information becomes clear to our vision, and there is no difficulty in realizing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this verse, Sukadeva Goswami is explaining the how the those who are situated in Shantarati, what is the shelter of those who are situated in Shantarati. Those who are situated in Shantarati, they see the Supreme Lord situated as Paramatma in everyone's heart. And this Paramatma can be inferred, Anumapakai, can be inferred using our intelligence. The presence of the Paramatma can be inferred. So that is what he explains here. Next verse. Tasmat sarvatmana rajan Hari sarvatra sarvada Shrotavya kirti tavyascha Smartavyo bhagavandrana.
O King, it is therefore essential that every human being hear about, glorify and remember the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, always and everywhere.
So again, Sukadeva Goswami is actually mentioning the 33rd and the 34th verse. He explained that how the devotional service is the most auspicious path. There is no other auspicious path apart from devotional service. So now he is again coming back to that point, that therefore sarvatra sarvada, that means in all times and places, one should actually shrotavya kirtitavyasya smartavya, one should hear, chant and remember the Supreme Lord. So this is actually equivalent to the same verse in the second canto, first chapter, or the first canto, second chapter, tasma dekena manasa Bhagavan Satvatam Patihi Sorta Shrotavya Kirtitavyascha Deya Pujyascha Nityada. The same conclusion is actually repeated over here. So here Prabhupada has written very nice purport, so I'll just go through some of the sentences. So here Prabhupada emphasizes especially on hearing. Out of all the 9 methods, hearing is the most important function in the process of bhakti yoga. Without hearing sufficiently and properly, means quantity and also qualitatively. Properly means here it means attentively or in the right mood, and also sufficiently. There's a verse in the third canto, Shrutasya Pumsam Suchira Shramasya Nanvanjasa Suribi Ridi Torta Tattat Gunanu Shravanam Mukunda Padaravinda Hridayeshu Yesham. So there also it's explained, Shrutasya Pumsam Suchira Shramasya. One should hear with great labor. That means sufficiently and also attentively. Suchira Pumsam Suchira Shramasya Nanvanjasa Suribi Ridi Torta. When a person hears sufficiently and also properly, then a person can capture the Supreme Lord within one's heart. You can bring the Lord under one's control. Sufficiently and properly, then one can make progress in any of the methods of practice. So he says that hearing is the special duty of a human being. Prabhupada highlighted in the first canto, second chapter purport also. So he explained that the main difference between a human being and an animal, it lies in the process of hearing. Human being can hear Vedic scriptures, but animals cannot hear. So therefore, when the human being comes to the point of taking advantage of, comes to the point of hearing the Vedic sound vibration, then he actually comes to the platform of human life. till the time when he does not come to the point of giving oral reception to Vedic sound vibration, he is still on the animal platform. And then he says that machinery is not bad, because machinery gives an opportunity to actually hear transcendental sound vibration. But if the machinery is used for wrong purposes, then it causes degradation. So then he also says that hearing, when a person hears properly, it leads to enthusiasm for glorifying the Lord. And the process of hearing is solidified by chanting the glories of the Lord. So then Prabhupada also highlights this word, sarvatra sarvada. That means he is saying that this hearing and chanting of the glories of the Supreme Lord should be performed in all time, place and circumstances. Irrespective of the time, place and circumstances, Bhagavad Dharma should be propagated everywhere. So last verse. Pibanti ye bhagavata atmanasatam katamritam shravanaputeshu samvritam punanti te visaya vidushitashayam vrajanti tacharana saroruhantikam.
Those who drink through other reception, fully filled with the nectarian message of Lord Krishna, the beloved of the devotees, purify the polluted aim of life known as material enjoyment, and thus go back to Godhead, to the lotus feet of him, the personality of Godhead.
So here Shukadeva Goswami concludes by saying, he talks about the two main benefits of sadhana bhakti. The two main benefits of sadhana bhakti is punanti te visaya vidushitashayam. The first benefit is explained in the third line, second benefit is explained in the fourth line. Punanti te visaya vidushitashayam, that means one becomes purified of all the material contamination. Or Prabhupada translates so beautifully, one becomes purified of the polluted aim of life known as material enjoyment. Vishaya vidushitashayam. So this is the unsought result. Unsought result is the purification, getting rid of the anarthas. But the real main result is vrajanti tat charana saroruhantikam. A person goes to the spiritual world, or attains the lotus feet of the Lord. One goes back home, back to Godhead. In order to attain these two results, what a person should do? Pibantiye Bhagavata Atmana Satam Katamritam. One should actually hear the pastimes of the Lord, or one should drink the Krishna Katha. One should drink the Krishna Katha with Shravana Puteshu. In order to drink, we need a cup. So what is the cup? Shravana Puteshu, with the cup of the ear. Shravana Puteshu Sambhritam. So the word Pibanti means, usually drinking means, when you are drinking something, you will be relishing, like something, juices, drink is more relishable than something which you have to chew with your hands, chew with your teeth. So here Pibanti, it refers to, because the word Pibanti is used, that indicates that it refers to those people who have received perfection, who have reached perfection in relishing the sweetness. So only those who have reached perfection, those who have developed a lot of taste, so they actually, when they are hearing Krishna Katha, they get the feeling of drinking Krishna Katha. That means like they are relishing Krishna Katha. That means when a person has come to the stage of perfection of relishing Krishna Katha, then what is the result of that? That means he has come to the stage of prema. The result of that is that a person develops the prema, love for the Lord. When a person develops the love for the Lord, then a person goes to the spiritual world. Vrajanti the charana saroruhantikam. So this the word Pibanti indicates that those who are not developed Rati are directed to perform sadhana bhakti, and those who are actually come to the stage of Rati, those who attained perfection, they relish hearing Krishna Katha, they become purified of the material contamination, and they go back home, back to Supreme Lord. So Saroruhantikam means, Saroruha means lotus. So Prabhupada writes that the spiritual world resembles a huge lotus flower. So that is why Krishna's lotus feet is called as lotus feet. Huh. And he also explains in the purport that the supply source is complete. Yeah, Prabhupada writes in the purport, Krishna has created the material world in such a way that in every planet he has provided ample quantities of rice, grains, and all the vegetables which are needed for living in this world. So the supply source is complete. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate. Everything emanates from the Supreme Lord is also perfect and complete. The supply source is complete. So only a little energy by the human being is required to get his necessities into the proper channel. So what Prabhupada is highlighting here is that the concept of simple living and high thinking. So everything is provided by the Lord, only little energy is required. So there is no need of machines. So life is never made comfortable by artificial needs, but by plain living and high thinking. So this concept of simple living and high thinking, so the simple living is related with the lifestyle of, like, as far as possible, the simplified lifestyle. So the simple living helps a person to not get entangled in the Bahiranga Shakti, to not get entangled in the external energy. And high thinking helps a person to get connected to the Antaranga Shakti, internal energy. So there is a lifestyle, and the purpose of the lifestyle is to actually, it's not simply having a lifestyle, but to actually develop a high thinking part. Simple living helps us to not get entangled with the external energy, and high thinking helps us to get connected to the internal energy. So both were actually highlighted by Prabhupada here. So you'll see many purports Prabhupada not just talks about the, many times in our preaching we only talk about the high thinking, but sometimes we don't highlight the simple living part. So that means if the lifestyle is not connected, if the lifestyle is not suit, like there is a particular lifestyle also required to, which will be conducive for the practice of sadhana bhakti. So the lifestyle is, if it is artificial, although like you may be practicing, you may be speaking about lofty philosophies, but because of the improper lifestyle, we may become more and more entangled in the external energy. So Prabhupada, many places, if you remember in the first canto, third chapter also, there is a beautiful purport. He says that one who hears Srimad Bhagavatam with rapt attention, he will actually see the Supreme Lord in the pages of the Bhagavatam. But one cannot hear rapt attention unless a person is pure in his mind. And one cannot be pure in his mind unless a person is pure in his habits. One cannot be pure in his habits unless a person is pure in his eating, mating, sleeping and defending. So he is always mentioning the lifestyle part and the high thinking part. Where the lifestyle helps us to not get entangled in external energy, Bahiranga Shakti, and high thinking helps us to get connected with the Antaranga Shakti. So that is what Prabhupada is highlighting here also. So then we'll go to the next chapter. Sri Shuka Uvacha. Evametam nigaditam prishtavan yadbhavan mama nrinam yan mriyamananam manushyeshu maneshinam.
Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, Maharaj Parikshit, as you have inquired from me as to the duty of the intelligent man who is one on the threshold of death, so I have answered you.
So Sukadeva Goswami is saying that he explained the two paths according to the yoga for those who are intelligent among men and dying. So Sukadeva Goswami has explained the path of both the path of Krama Mukti and the path of direct liberation, and then he has explained the path of bhakti for the intelligent people. Manushyeshu manishinam. So ninam yan mriyamananam, in those who are about to die, and manishinam, those who are intelligent among the manushya, among the human beings. So like for them, Sukadeva Goswami has explained the path of bhakti yoga. Huh. So Prabhupada explains that he basically explains the word manushyanam sahasreshu, out of thousands of people who are in the bodily concept of life, hardly one inquires about the self, and then they consult the scriptures, and then one may actually accept a spiritual master. So like that he explains. So the importance of human life, the intelligent class of human being must take a serious note of this opportunity. Not all human beings are intelligent, and so the importance of human life is not always understood. Therefore, manishinam, meaning thoughtful, is particularly used here. A manishinam person like Maharaj Parikshit must therefore take to the lotus feet of Krishna and fully engage himself in devotional service. So now, after he said that I have described the path of bhakti for the intelligent people. Now, for those people who are not intelligent among men, what are the activities of those who are not intelligent among men? So they, instead of practicing bhakti to worship the Supreme Lord, they worship the different demigods. So he explains the demigod worshippers in the next 8 verses. Verse number 2 to 9. So, you can read the translation, verse number 2 to 7.
One who desires to be absorbed in the impersonal Brahma Jyoti effulgence should worship the master of Vedas, Lord Brahma, or Brihaspati, the learned priest. One who desires powerful sex should worship heavenly king Indra, and one who desires good progeny should worship the great progenitors called the Prajapatis. One who desires good fortune should worship Durga Devi, the superintendent of the material world. One desiring to be very powerful should worship fire. One who aspires only after money should worship the Vasus. One should worship the Rudra incarnation of Lord Shiva if he wants to be a great hero. One who wants a large stock of grain should worship Aditi. One who desires to attain the heavenly planets should worship the sons of Aditi. One who desires a worldly kingdom should worship Vishwadeva. And one who wants...
We can see that there's a long list. Sadhya, Ashwini Kumar, Yarth, Gandharva, Sapsara, Survashi, Lord Brahma. So you may go through that. So essentially here again Prabhupada says that generally a conditioned soul cannot be expert in everything. But by worshipping some demigod, he can develop expertise at least in some particular food, some particular field. An example, he says, Ravana, by worshipping Lord Shiva, he attained expertise. He developed so many powers. So then he explains that rare, rarer and rarest. So it is very rare to get a human form of life. And rarer, even among the human beings, those human beings who are conscious of the problems of life, birth, old age, disease and death, they are even more rare. And then he says, even among those human beings who are conscious of the problems of life, those who are conscious of the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, they are the rarest of all human beings. So human being, and the next is conscious of the problems, and third is conscious of the message of the Bhagavatam. So three levels of rarity. So then he explains that Parishit Maharaj is addressed as Manishi, that means an intelligent person. So such aspirations for different material benedictions are something like the intoxication of the degraded human society. So he explains that less intelligent people aspire for the material enjoyment, but the Manishis aspire for going back to Godhead. Then further he continues in the 8th and 9th verse that how a person should worship different Lord Vishnu or his devotees for spiritual advancement and knowledge, and one should worship the Manus for domination over a kingdom or an empire, that one should worship the demons for victory over an enemy. So like that different things are explained. Then after describing in the 9th verse purport, Prabhupada again he highlights. So Prabhupada is actually going ahead of the verses. He says that one should be sensible and one should worship the Supreme Personality of God. So he is essentially saying that by worshipping the demigods, the problems of life will not be solved. The results are only temporary. But the leaders of nonsensical persons, they advocate the philosophy of yato mat tato pat. Whatever path you may follow, you will get the same result. And it is actually such a foolish this one that we don't actually apply this philosophy in our day-to-day life. We don't say that whichever train you may catch, you will go to Delhi. So we are particular about that. But so this is the Yatomant Tatopat, which is a philosophy propagated by especially the impersonalists. Then 10th verse, this is the most important verse. Akama sarva kamo va moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param.
A person who has broader intelligence, whether he be full of all material desires without any material desire, or desiring liberation, must by all means worship the Supreme Whole, the Personality of Godhead.
So after talking about the unintelligent people, he's talking about the path chosen by intelligent people. So here he's explaining that one who worships the Supreme Lord by the process of Bhakti Yoga, which is unmixed with the process of jnana and karma. Tivrena bhakti yogena means tivrena bhakti, which is not mixed with jnana and karma. And yajeta purusham param, worshipping the Supreme Personality of God. So there are three things. One is the process, whom you worship, and third is the intention. So according to Srimad Bhagavatam, you should worship the Supreme Lord and using the process of Bhakti Yoga. But if the intention, even if the intention is material or even the desire for liberation, ultimately one will be purified. So as long as the process and the person whom you worship is actually Bhakti and the Supreme Lord, then a person is considered to be intelligent. So this is akama, sarvakama, moksha kama. So akama means it refers to a pure devotee who does not have any material desire. So Jiva Goswami explains that akama means bhajaniya parama purusha sukamatra svasukatvam. That means one who worships the Lord only with the desire to please the Lord. So akama does not mean complete desirelessness. It means having the only desire to please the Lord. That is what akama here means. So it refers to a pure devotee. So this means that one should feel happy only by experiencing the happiness of the Supreme Lord. And then he says that partial manifestation of this akama spirit is sometimes we see in this world in the form of philanthropy, altruism, where people don't have any selfish interest for themselves. They want to do good for others. But not the Supreme Lord, general society in general. This is like a partial or a perverted reflection of the Akama spirit. This intuition of the living being is sometimes manifested even during the conditioned stage of a living being in the material world. And such intuition is expressed in the manner of altruism, philanthropy, socialism, communism, etc. by the undeveloped minds of the less intelligent persons. And then Prabhupada explains, who are the best examples of the Akama spirit? The perfect examples of the Akama spirit are the gopis. So he says that the Kama spirit is the desire for one's own satisfaction is exhibited fully in the material world, and Akama spirit is fully exhibited in the spiritual world. And he also explains that Arjuna, before hearing Bhagavad Gita, he was having the Kama spirit. That means like for his own satisfaction, he didn't want to fight the battle. He did not want to be known as a violent man. He wanted to save his relatives for his own satisfaction. But after hearing the Gita, he came to the Akama spirit. He fought the battle just for the pleasure of Krishna. So, yes, when you see this verse, first Akama comes. Akama means there is no desire, only desire to please the Lord. There is no desire for oneself. And Sarva Kama means being filled with all kinds of material desire. And then Moksha Kama comes, desire for liberation. So one might think that it does not appear to be in the proper order. Akama is, there is no desire for oneself. There is no desire for sense gratification. There is zero desire for sense gratification. Sarva Kama means like so many desires of sense gratification. And Moksha Kama is just one desire. So zero, infinite number of material desires and one desire for liberation. It's neither in the ascending order nor in the descending order. So Vishnu Chakravarti writes in the purport, he says that the one desire for liberation, Moksha Kama, it is greater than having all kinds of material desires. Because in any desire for sense gratification, the ultimate aim is to get happiness and to get relief from suffering. Any desire for sense gratification, it is driven by these two things, to get happiness and to get relief from suffering. So this impetus to get happiness and to get relief from suffering, it is most intense in the desire for liberation. So therefore, although the Moksha Kami is having only one desire for liberation, it is greater than having infinite number of material desires. So if you read the, I think, sixth chapter, first verse purport, Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada mentions that the desire for liberation is greater than in any material desire. So therefore, it is actually in the proper order. Akama means there is no desire for sense gratification. Sarva Kama is having all kinds of material desires. And even higher than that is having the desire for liberation. So, in all cases, Trivena Bhakti Yogena. So here the word Udara comes. Moksha Kama Udaradi. Udaradi means those who perform the Tivra Bhakti to the Supreme Lord, they are considered to be having broader intelligence. They are considered to be having a broader outlook because they have at least identified the highest authority and the right process. Although the desires may be different, could be materially motivated.
Liberation is
No, what I said was that the desire for liberation, the impetus to get happiness and to get relief from suffering, it is more intense than any material desire. So because a person wants to completely get rid of the material existence, wants to get rid of any type of material existence, like he wants to go beyond the material world and merge into the impersonal Brahman, that means like he wants to get in the other kind of material desire. Even after getting the material object, after some time you may lose that object, suffering will come. But in the desire for liberation, a person wants to no longer want suffering, so therefore he doesn't want any material sense gratification. So although he appears to be very detached, but the intensity to get happiness and to get relief from suffering, it is more intense than in a person who is having material desire. Because he completely wants to get rid of the material world and to get everlasting, at least, peace. Like that. So that her intensity is more. So Vishnu Chakravarti says that the word kama itself indicates a desire to destroy suffering and attain happiness. Those desires are shown to be stronger in the jnanis engaged in destroying the suffering of the samsara and anxious for the happiness of the anxious for the experience of the happiness of Brahman than in the karmis who desire to destroy temporary suffering and gain temporary happiness of swarga by worshipping the devatas. So this desire to, the intensity to get happiness and get rid of the suffering is more intense in the desire for liberation, because he wants to permanently put this end. So that is what is explained here. But udaradi means one who is having a broader outlook. So here, what I want to highlight here is that the same word udara, Prabhupada mentions that how it comes in the Bhagavad Gita also. Udara sarva evaite jnani tvatmaiva me matam astita sahi yuktatma mamevan uttamam gatim. There also Krishna says that all these people are magnanimous. Chaturvidha bhajante mam. All these four people who come to me, although he glorified the jnani as the topmost, tesham jnani nitya yukta, but he says all these people are magnanimous. So usually when somebody goes to a rich person, when he gets something from the rich person, and then after getting something from a rich person, the beggar will call the rich person as magnanimous. Oh, you are so magnanimous, you gave this charity. But here, the Krishna, after giving something to people who came to him, and then he's saying that, oh, these people are magnanimous. The rich person is calling the beggars as magnanimous, not the beggar is calling the rich person as magnanimous. So why Krishna is calling them as magnanimous? So there are three reasons. One reason is that Krishna is feeling that these people are, by coming to me, they are generous in giving me their love. There are so many people are in this world, but they don't come to me. But these people, they have come to me. By coming to me, they are giving me a happiness of, they are giving me the happiness what the father gets when the child asks something, please give me something, and the father gives something, the father gets a happiness of reciprocation. The father feels that the loving reciprocation from the child. So Krishna is feeling that because they are generous in giving me their love, so therefore he is calling them as udara. And then second reason he says is that these people, by coming to me and taking something from me, they have given me the title as udara. They have given me the title as udara. But now I want to do award vapsi. It's like I want to give the title back to them. They have given me the title as udara, but I want to give this title back to them. So therefore, I will call them as udara. And the third reason why he is calling them as Udara is that when a person has received something from Krishna, he becomes such a rich person that he starts giving to others. So therefore, he becomes Udara. When a person receives something from Krishna, he will start giving to others. That means like he will start giving that the experience of the love from the Supreme Lord, he starts giving that Krishna Bhakti to others. Therefore, he becomes Udara. So, another point which we can see in this verse is that if we compare this verse with the second verse of the Bhagavatam, Dharma Projita Kaitavotra Paramo Nirmatsaranam. So there, it's explained that Bhagavatam kicks out all kinds of Kaitava Dharma. All kinds of Kaitava Dharmas are kicked out. So there, it's explained that Kaitava Dharma means cheating religion. So Jiva Goswami explains that any desire, if a person has even one desire apart from the desire to please Krishna, that means he is considered to be practicing cheating religion. So he is so strict in the definition of Kaitava Dharma, that means even if a person comes to Krishna and practicing bhakti, but he only has desire to please Krishna, but there is one desire apart from the desire to please Krishna. Even if there is only one such desire also, that means he is practicing Kaitava Dharma, cheating religion. So, although he is giving such a strict definition of what is actually real Bhagavad Dharma, that means only the desire to please Krishna, it is such a strict definition, but the same Srimad Bhagavatam, here Sukadeva Goswami is encouraging everyone by saying that whether you have Akama or Sarvakama or Moksha Kama, one should perform intense devotional service. So we see 1.1.2, Bhagavatam has the mood of establishing the Siddhanta. When it comes to establishing Siddhanta, you cannot compromise even little bit. When you establish the Siddhanta of what is Bhagavad Dharma, you have to say that even if a person has one desire apart from the desire to please Krishna, it is not Bhagavad Dharma, it is a cheating religion. In the case of establishing Siddhanta, there cannot be any compromise. But sometimes, in establishing Siddhanta, although we may not compromise, but it can be discouraging to people, because most people in this world, they have so many desires. If you only speak about the Siddhanta, what is pure devotional service, most people will be discouraged. So therefore, the enlightenment or the establishment of the Siddhanta should be accompanied with encouragement of the people. So in this verse, Sukadeva Goswami is encouraging everyone. So even if you have many material desires, or one desire, or two desires, or many material desires, you perform intense devotional service to Krishna. So, in the name of establishing Siddhanta, one should not compromise on the Siddhanta. And in the name of establishing Siddhanta, it should not be discouraging to the people. So, there should be, both elements should be there in the preaching. That means, encouragement should be accompanied with enlightenment. So, enlightenment here means establishing the Siddhanta properly. What is the Bhagavad Dharma? What is the true Bhagavad Dharma and what are actually cheating religions? So we can see that 1.1.2 is the complete pure establishment of the Siddhanta as what is Bhagavad Dharma. But here Sukadeva Goswami is encouraging the readers, encouraging the hearers by saying that whatever desire one may have, one should perform intense devotional service. So this is the mood of preaching also, which comes in many places. So, both enlightenment without encouragement and encouragement without enlightenment, it will not lead to the proper fruit, it is actually imbalanced. It will not have the proper use. So enlightenment has to be accompanied with encouragement. Next verse. Etavan eva yajatam iha nishreyasodayaha bhagavatyachalo bhavo yadbhagavata sangataha.
All the different kinds of worshippers of multi-demigods can attain the highest perfectional benedictions, which is spontaneous attraction unflinchingly fixed upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead only by association of the pure devotees of the Lord.
So here he is explaining that, all these demigod worshippers, the previously which was explained from the second to ninth verse, how they can attain perfection. So they will attain perfection if they get the association of the devotees of the Lord. Yad Bhagavata Sangataha. So that is the implication here. So if they will attain the highest good, if an attitude of service to the Lord arises because of association with the devotees, otherwise no good arises. So simply by worshipping demigods, that cannot become the cause of developing bhakti. The cause of developing bhakti is only when they get the association of some devotee. So all these demigod worshippers, if they get the association of devotees, then they can actually, they'll start practicing bhakti. So here Prabhupada has written a beautiful purport. So one few points I'll just highlight. So Prabhupada talks about the majority of the purport. He says that the gross materialistic people, they are simply trying to actually lord it over the three modes of material nature. They are simply lord it over they are making different plans for material enjoyment. And then he says that although there are so many plan-making missions, but all these plan-making missions, they simply become a history. The history of the universe is full of such plan-makers, and many kings and emperors come and go, leaving a plan-making story only. But the prime problems of life remain unsolved despite all endeavors by such plan makers. So then he says that, even if a person wants to get rid of these real problems of life, but if he worships the demigods, then also one cannot get rid of the real problems of life, because by worshipping the demigods, one will be only within the material world. Apart from the gross materialists who care very little either for God or for the demigods, the Vedas recommend worship of the different demigods for different benefits. So the demigods are neither false nor imaginary. Then he explains that modern people, they do not even believe in the other planets or the demigods. He talks about the moon landing mission. He goes to different subjects. And then the moon landing people, there was advertisement for buying land in the moon. But all these are actually false advertisements. So then there is one point which I want to highlight in the 148th page, that is in the last page of the purport, the second last paragraph. So there he is talking about the superiority of the demigod worshippers over the gross materialists. He says the worshippers of the demigods have one facility more than the unbelievers due to their being convinced of the Vedic version, by which they can get information of the benefit of worshipping the Supreme Lord in the association of devotees of the Lord. So at least they have come within the Vedic realm, demigod worshippers. So therefore, there is a possibility that they will come in contact with those sections of the Vedas about devotional service. They will come and will search for the devotees. So that is the advantage of that way the demigod worshippers are superior to the gross materialists. So that is why when Krishna in the 7th chapter of the Gita, He says, Yo-yo yam yam tanum bhakta shraddhayarchitam ichyati tasya tasya chalam shraddham tamiva vidadamyaham. So he explains that if a person wants to worship a demigod, I make the faith of the person steady so that he can devote himself to that deity. So that means Krishna is giving some value to the demigod worship. Otherwise, why would he actually want to make the faith of the person steady? So that means the demigod worshipper, at least by coming within the Vedic realm, there is a chance for gradual advancement. And that's what the story of that one Brahmana was worshipping Lord Shiva. And by worshipping Lord Shiva, they came in, Lord Shiva, he wanted a touchstone. And the Lord Shiva told him to go to Sanatan Goswami. So initially he had faith in the demigod worship. And then he had a good intention by the mercy of Lord Shiva. He got the association of Sanatan Goswami. So initially he came to Sanatan Goswami with a desire to get a touchstone. That means with a mixed faith. Pure faith means you come to a devotee only to please him. But he has come to Sanatan Goswami with a desire to get something material. He came with a mixed faith. And then that mixed faith gradually led to pure faith. Sanatan Goswami said that touchstone is there in the dustbin. So then he started thinking that, oh, if the touchstone is there in the dustbin, that means he must be having something more greater. Then he said, what is the thing which you have something more valuable than the touchstone? So then he said, if you want to get that, you first throw the touchstone in the Yamuna. So then he became ready to throw the touchstone in the Yamuna. So that means now initially he came to Sanatan Goswami with a mixed faith. And that mixed faith, it gradually came to the level of pure faith by the association of Sanatan Goswami. The association of Sanatan Goswami, he became ready to throw the touchstone. He became ready to give up all his attachment to the material things. And then he wanted to get what he has, something which is more valuable. So in that way, of course, so traditionally speaking, in the Vedic, when the Varnashram and the Vedic culture was prominent, that time the demigod worship would gradually, demigod worship, a person becomes more purified, a person develops more confidence in the Vedas, one may come in contact with some sadhus. But in the Kali Yuga, Prabhupada did not actually recommend demigod worship, because in Kali Yuga, to properly worship some demigod is also not possible. So all kind of concocted worship of the demigods is only going on. So previously, at least people were, the demigod worship, at least they were doing properly. And because of proper demigod worship, there is a chance for gradually getting purified, and a person can look for something non-material goal in his life. From Karma Kanda, he may come to Karma Yoga, Nishkama Karma Yoga. There is a possibility. Of course, he still has to get the association of a devotee. He cannot simply this one. But in Kali Yuga, Shivaram Maharaj writes in his book that Prabhupada did not recommend demigod worship, although traditionally demigod worship can gradually get elevated. Because in Kali Yuga, if you see demigod worship, all kind of, in Ganpati Puja, people worship Ganpati using concocted methods. So that is nowhere near to demigod worship. So it will never, they will never get, gradually get purified or something. Yeah, what's your question, Drew? Why does Krishna encourage demigod worship? Yeah, that is why at least a person is coming, he is actually putting faith in the Vedic authority. Instead of, he is coming within the Vedic realm. So, if somebody is not ready to accept him as the Supreme Lord, Krishna says, okay, at least if you are not ready to accept me, at least accept some other authority who is appointed me. When he sees the inclination of the person to worship the demigod, okay, at least he makes that faith of the person steady, or at least accept some superior authority. By that, he will, there will be some gradual level of purification. So Krishna is one is that if a person does not accept the demigod worship, where he will go? He will be just enjoying sense gratification by practicing irreligious means, using irreligious means. He will degrade much further. So one is the highest thing is coming to him. If he is not ready to come to me, but if he is inclined towards some demigod, at least he makes the faith of the person to worship that demigod. So that instead of degrading to the lower modes, he is at least going towards the mode of goodness. Krishna, about Krishna giving material benedictions, yeah, Krishna also gives, but Krishna also purifies. Krishna gives the material benedictions in such a way that a devotee no longer desires material, no longer desires that. That verses from Chaitanya Bhagavat comes, that Swacharanamrita Dehe, that. Yeah, those verses. A person comes to with a material desire, but he is actually full, but Krishna gives his own Charanamrita. He fulfills the material desire, but he gives in such a way that he no longer desires that. Because when he experiences the reciprocation with Krishna, he feels that, like Dhruva Maharaj felt that, oh, I was looking for some broken piece of glass. So, we'll take a break. Then we'll start. Fully charged, we can get. is very rare. Usually demigod worship means it will be with some material desire. Somebody asked Prabhupada that, what if somebody worships Lord Shiva with the pure intention? The Prabhupada said, what is the possibility of somebody entering a liquor bar without getting drunk? It's very rare, because when you read that first canto, second chapter, the demigod worshippers, because the demigods' forms are in the modes of passion and ignorance. So only those people who are in the modes of passion and ignorance, they get attracted to the forms of the passion, modes of passion and ignorance. Birds of a feather flock together. And the nature of mode of passion and ignorance is that material desires are there. So because they are attracted to the modes of passion and ignorance, because they themselves are in that, and they will have different material desires.
So is it not true that the demigod is a direct good source
of... Yeah. They may direct, definitely. Just the example of this Brahmana, Lord Shiva. But most people, they go to the demigod. It's an example of somebody who is a pure-hearted, like who is this... somewhat. He also had a material desire, that is why he went to Lord Shiva to get a chantam. But generally, to find somebody who is more pure-hearted and demigod worshiper, so usually they will have to get the association of a devotee. Most of the time, demigods reciprocate with them like in an official manner. They did this puja, although they are devotees. Most of them they reciprocate in an official manner. In this case, he directed to the Sanatana Goswami. How many such stories are there?
continue. So, yeah.
Hari Ram, Ram, Ram. 12th
verse. Can read the translation, 12th verse.
Transcendental knowledge in relation with the Supreme Lord Hari is knowledge resulting in the complete suspension of the waves and whirlpools of the material world modes. Such knowledge is self-satisfying due to its being free from material attachment and being transcendental. It is approved by authorities. Who could fail to be attracted?
So the connection from the previous verse is that the last set of verses, Shukadev Goswami talked about demigod worshippers, and then he said those who are really intelligent worship the Supreme Lord. The demigod worshippers, if they get the association of the devotees, they also start practicing bhakti. So one may get a question, if somebody had been worshipping a particular demigod in his life, and then suddenly he gives up the demigod worship, and then if he starts worshipping the Supreme Lord, then will the demigod not become angry with him? So generally many people have this question though. How can we leave the demigod worship? Is it possible for a person who has always worshipped some demigod to develop devotion to the Lord at the end? Or how can that person leave the demigod worship? So here, in this verse, what Shukadev Goswami is saying is that what to speak of demigod worshippers, even those who are inclined towards Brahman, even the worshippers of Brahman, they also take to the worship of the Lord. The worshippers of Brahman are higher than the demigod worshippers. Even they take to the worship of the Lord, therefore, there is no fault in demigod worshippers leaving the worship of the demigods and taking to worship of the Supreme Lord. So he is addressing the question. Jnanam yad a pratinivritta gunormi chakram. So here he is talking about the path of jnana that is practiced by those who are worshippers of Brahman. So if jnana, which is the path approved for attaining the Lord, yad a pratinivritta gunormi chakram, which creates indifference to the multitude of material gunas, atma prasada utayatra gunesh asanga, and which is followed by the satisfaction of the self, atma prasada. So yanam yad a pratinivritta gunormi chakram. Gunormi chakram means it creates pratinivritta, it creates indifference to the multitude of gunormi chakra, multitude of material gunas, or I think yatra guneshva sangha, and which is followed by the satisfaction of the self, and which creates complete detachment from the gunas, gunesh asanga, then bhakti yoga should arise. Ata bhakti yoga. Experiencing bliss in bhakti, how can that person not have attraction for topics of the Lord? So the essential point in this verse is that even the jnanis who are actually inclined towards impersonal Brahman, even they also take to the bhakti yoga. So therefore, there is no fault in the part of the demigod worshippers who are actually below the jnanis. There is no fault in them if they reject the demigod worship and take to the worship of the Lord through bhakti yoga. So that is the implication of this particular verse. Why not? Yeah, that's the same point I mentioned. If even the jnanis take to bhakti after leaving the path of jnana, why not demigod worshippers? Why can't they take? Because demigod worshippers are following the path which is actually lower than jnana. Demigod worshippers, they are basically following the path of karma, worshipping demigods to get material desires. So generally people feel that, oh, if I leave this path of demigod worship and take to the path of bhakti, maybe I'll get some bad results or demigods will become angry. People think like that. So Shukadeva Goswami is saying that even those who are above the demigod worshippers, the jnanis who are following a higher path, even they take to the worship of bhakti. Then there is no fault in demigod worshippers. They will not get any bad results if they leave the path of demigod worship and take to the path of bhakti. See, in regards to demigod worship, devotees worshipping demigods. So what is actually condemned in demigod worship is that seeing the demigods as independent controllers. Seeing them as independent of the Supreme Lord, and that attitude is actually condemned. They are considered as less intelligent. Kamaisthayaste hridagyana prapadyante anya devata. But when the devotees actually worship the demigods, they don't worship the demigods, they respect them as part and parcel of the Lord. They respect them as the appointed servants by the Lord. That is why one of the item of sadhana bhakti among the 64 items is not disrespecting the demigods. So one should worship Krishna and respect the demigods and respect all living entities. So respect is for everyone, but worship is only for Krishna. So that is the point. But in the case of Govardhan Leela, when the devotees, when they go to the demigods, so they see in this attitude that their main worship is for Krishna, their main love is for Krishna. So all these Nandamara, their heart is for Krishna, but they're just following the custom. They're not considering Indra to be the supreme personality of God. So for them, the worshipable deity is Narayan. They are just following the custom of Indra Puja. Yeah, it is. For example, so when we read fifth canto, when Bharat Maharaj was performing different, karma kanda rituals. As a king, he had to set example for the citizens for how to actually get their material desires fulfilled by worshipping a demigod through karma kanda rituals. But he himself was a pure devotee. So when the priest would offer Indraya Swaha, in his mind he would be thinking that, oh, this is an offering to the hand of my Supreme Lord. Because the demigods represent the different limbs of the Lord. So by his pure intention, he was externally doing the act of demigod worship. But by his pure intentions, he remained pure. And he was just following the custom, he was just setting example for others. For those people who are not qualified to, who are not ready to take devotional service, but at least instead of becoming some normal materialistic person and getting degraded, at least they follow a dharmic way of getting their material desires fulfilled. For that he was showing like that. So in the case of Nanda Maharaj, they did not consider Krishna to be the Supreme Lord. Krishna, they considered Krishna to be the son, but they considered Narayan to be the Supreme Lord. But they worshipped, they respected demigod. They respected Indra as a part of as a demigod, not thinking Indra to be the Supreme Lord. From Prabhupada's translation, transcendental knowledge in relation to the Supreme Lord is knowledge, Supreme Lord Hari is knowledge resulting in the complete suspension of the waves and whirlpools of material moods. Such knowledge is self-satisfying due to its being free from the material attachment. And being transcendental, it is approved by the authorities. So who could fail to be attracted? So Prabhupada is actually is giving the, when we read the purport, Prabhupada mentions these points, but in the translation he is giving a more devotional, from the essence point of view, he is giving the translation. The essence point of view. He is saying that the transcendental knowledge is ultimately knowledge in relation to the Supreme Lord Hari. That means the devotional service of the Lord. And such knowledge, because you see the same verses, the Prabhupada has referred to 12 commentaries. So I read Vishnu Chakravarti's commentary to show that connection based on Vishnu Chakravarti's this one. The Prabhupada has referred to different commentaries. Maybe he might have translated. So different acharyas might have translated the same verse in a different way. It's possible. So Prabhupada might have translated according to other acharyas also. Or Prabhupada has given, many times he translates from the essence point of view. So we should not get confused why this translation, Vishnu Chakravarti's translation is different, this translation is different. So we are just taking help of the translation to understand how the flow of the verses. But Prabhupada is also, from essence point of view, it is same only. Sometime there may be certain difference in the technicalities. Next verse. Now, the next verse. Now, at this time, after hearing all these things, the Shaunakadi Rishis, they are asking the next set of questions. So they are saying that, what else did Parishit Maharaj ask from Shukadeva Goswami? So here, they are saying that Shukadeva Goswami is a Kavi, Vayasakim Rishim Kavim. So Prabhupada explains that one of the 26 qualities of a devotee is that he is a poet. So Shukadeva Goswami is the poet among the sages. Then, in the 14th verse, what else did they ask? After that, they are saying, definitely because Parishit Maharaj is a great devotee and Shukadeva Goswami is a great devotee, definitely they must have discussed about the Supreme Lord. But whenever there is an assembly of great devotees, the discussion must be about the Supreme Lord. Please continue to explain those topics. They must have discussed more about the Supreme Lord. So Prabhupada writes, gives a detailed purport. He says that, as we already quoted from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, even mundane things, if detailed in the service of the Lord, are accepted as transcendental. So besides the topics which result in discussion of Lord Hari should certainly be discussed in the assembly of devotees. So the point here is that what the sages are saying is that they must have definitely discussed many topics which conclude in the discussion of the Supreme Lord. Katha Hari Kato Darka. And there we want to hear all those topics which were discussed between Parishit Maharaj and Shukadeva Goswami, which resulted in the conclusion of, which concluded in the discussion of the Supreme Lord. So one cannot say, the Shaunakadi Rishis, they are saying that it is not that we want to hear only about the pastimes of Krishna. We want to hear even about the creation pastimes. We want to hear about the sub-creation, the Manvantaras, and the different kings in the different Manu. Because all these subjects they conclude in the discussion of the Supreme Lord. We discussed in the that Nayat Vachas Chitrapadam Harer Yeshu, in that purport. If you remember that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the individual statements in the verses may not contain the glorification of the Lord. But the import of the statements, they always lead to the glorification of the Lord. Many of the individual statements in a story, this person is the son of this particular king, that person is the son of this particular king. So that individual verse does not contain any glorification of the Lord. But if you see the conclusion of that, it will be leading to maybe the story of Ambarish Maharaj. It will be leading to the story of Shaubari Muni. The conclusion is leading to glorification of the Lord. So therefore, Shukadeva Goswami, the sages are saying that So they must have discussed about many topics which conclude in the discussion of the Supreme Lord. So Prabhupada, that's why he is saying that even mundane things detailed in the service of the Lord are accepted as transcendental. Mahabharata is considered as the fifth Veda. And then he says that Bhagavad Gita is part of Mahabharata, and Bhagavad Gita is a graduate study, and Srimad Bhagavatam is a postgraduate study. And these subject matters should be discussed in the assembly of devotees. So he says there is a great tendency in the humanity to study history. But this tendency to study history should be detailed for the purpose of studying the histories related to the Lord. Huh. So even 50 years ago, in India villages, they would only actually enact the pastimes of Krishna. They would enact the stories from the scriptures as dramas. So only the histories from the scriptures would be discussed. So actually, if you see, the concept of novels were there only in the Western countries. They only introduced the concept of novels in India. Because in India, the art is definitely, art and stories are definitely need of a human being. A human being wants to read some fascinating novels and stories. But this need of a human being was fulfilled simply by the Puranic stories. So therefore, if you study the Indian history, previously nobody was writing some novels in the Indian history. Because all the Puranas, Mahabharata, Ramayana, they were perfectly satisfying this need of a human being. But only the Britishers came when they started interpreting the scriptures, when they actually made the faith of the people loose in these scriptures, then they introduced this concept of novels. And also, now also they felt that even the better to speculate based on Ramayana and Mahabharata. Now they are writing novels based on Ramayana and Mahabharata. So that is the point, purport of Prabhupada in the last paragraph. And then he explains that in the 15th verse, the Shravanakadi rishis are talking about the extraordinary nature of the hearer, about Parishit Maharaj. And the 16th verse, they are talking about the extraordinary nature of the speaker. That is Sukadeva Goswami. Huh. So you can read the 15th verse, translation.
Maharaj Parikshit, the grandson of the Pandavas, was from his very childhood a great devotee of the Lord. Even while playing with dolls, he used to worship Lord Krishna by imitating the worship of the family deity.
Normal. So he is saying that Maharaj Parikshit is such a great devotee. Huh. And Sukadeva Goswami, Vayasakishya Bhagavan, he is also Vasudeva Parayana, Urugaya Gunodara, Satam Syur, he Samagame. So definitely, because they are great devotees, there must have been great discussion which must have taken place among them. So here Prabhupada is writing the purport that Maharaj Parikshit is a devotee from the childhood. Maharaj Parikshit, even in his childhood, he used to imitate Krishna worship, and he was always searching for Krishna. So accepting, Maharaj Parikshit was naturally inclined to Krishna from his very childhood. So this is the being inclined towards Krishna worship from the childhood. It is a symptom of a Mahabhagavat. It is a symptom of a Nitya Siddha devotee. So that is one thing. And Prabhupada says that we were also, by the grace of our father, we were also born in a Vaishnava family, and we also were encouraged in all respects to observe the Ratayatra ceremony, like that he explains. That is a way of all people who are born in a Vaishnava families. And then when he explains about Sukadeva Goswami in the 16th verse, he says that both Maharaj Parikshit and Sukadeva Goswami, they are on the same platform, although externally Parishit Maharaj was a great king and Sukadeva Goswami was a completely renounced person who does not even wear clothes. But both are on the same category, on the same transcendental platform. So now, after glorifying the speaker and the hearer, definitely they must have discussed about the Supreme Lord. Now they are expressing more eagerness to hear about the Lord. So in the 17th verse, they are saying that, so we'll recite the verse together. Ayur harati vaipum sam udya nastam cha yannasav tasyarte yatshano nita uttama shloka vartaya.
Both by rising and by setting, the sun decreases the duration of life of everyone, except one who utilizes time by discussing topics of all good personality of Godhead.
So they are speaking this verse, their mood is that, please do not delay the description of Krishna Katha. Because of the rising and setting of the sun, one's lifespan will reduce except those who are engaged in discussing Krishna Katha. So these verses you will see, from 17th till the end of the chapter, they are expressing their eagerness by saying that in different ways. Please do not delay the discussion of Krishna Katha. So Vishnu Chakotakur writes that the sun steals away the men's lives except the life where there arises the opportunity for hearing topics of Krishna. He is giving a even more, more merciful or such an explanation. The translation says that those who are not discussing Krishna Katha, their lifespan will be reducing. But here Vishnu Chakotaku says that even the sun reduces the lifespan of all except where there arises the opportunity for hearing the topics of Krishna. Or the sun steals away the life except the life where even just one moment is spent in the topics of the Lord. So he is giving a even more, lenient point. Like even if a person spends one moment in the topics of the Lord, such a person's lifespan will not be taken away by the sun. So, but then there is another important point that Prabhupada also mentions. He says that the process of hearing is like the IV. So sometimes when you take a medicine tablet, it will take some time for the medicine to mix with the blood. But if you inject, it directly goes into the blood. So here, similarly, that the transcendental topics of the Lord injected through the ear of the pure devotees of the Lord can act very efficiently like a intravenous injection. And just like if a person attains perfection in the hearing process, one can attain perfection in all other processes. So this point was also discussed previously. And then there is a beautiful analogy which is given by Prabhupada based on Vishnu Chakotak's purport. That charity. So somebody, if a person gives charity to a half-qualified Brahmana or a non-Brahmana, he will at least get that much amount in return. And if he gives charity to a half-qualified Brahmana, he will gift at least double the amount in return. And if he gives charity to a fully qualified Brahmana, then the money is returned hundreds and thousands of times. But if the money is given in charity to a Veda Paranga, one who knows the conclusions of the Vedas, then the result is like unimaginable, immeasurable. So just like money given in charity to different people will definitely pay in return. Similarly, even one moment spent in hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord will definitely help a person. Even one moment passed in the association of pure devotee is a perfect guarantee for eternal life. So that is the Prabhupada's purport. But when we hear this verse, this verse says that those who are spending their time hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, their lifespan will not reduce. For everyone else, the lifespan will reduce. That means like devotees will not grow old, will not get old age or disease. One may think like that. But devotees also grow, they also grow old, they get diseases. So Vishnu Chakotakura explains The devotee's old age, death and sickness appears by the will of the Lord. And for three purposes. Why the devotees also get old age, disease and death like a normal conditioned soul, although they are engaged in hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord? Because of three reasons. Because by giving the old age and disease, the Lord wants to increase their longing. Increase their longing for the Lord. Increase their longing for the Lord. Second reason is that in order to let the, for letting the opinions of others not be destroyed. Yeah, this is a little difficult to understand. But the point is that there are other people, jnanis and karmis, who are following the other paths. And they feel that that the prarabdha karma will be destroyed. The jnanis think that the karmas of this life can be destroyed only by experiencing them. The prarabdha karmas will be destroyed only by experiencing them. So in order to let that the opinions of these jnanis to not be destroyed, so Krishna makes the devotee also go, makes the pure devotees also go through old age, disease, like a normal person, in which they, it appears that they are also experiencing the karma, their past karmas. Anyway, and the third reason why the Supreme Lord gives old age and disease even to the devotees is that in order to maintain the devotees confidential, in order to maintain the confidential nature of the path of bhakti, and in order to maintain the confidential nature of the devotees. So basically to increase the longing of the devotees toward the Supreme Lord, and secondly to maintain the confidential nature of the devotees, and thirdly to not allow the opinions of other people to get destroyed. What is the opinion of other people? That the karmas of this life will be extinguished only by experiencing them. So people feel that only when you experience the reactions, then only the karmas will be destroyed. So that is their opinions, jnanis and karmis. But by practicing bhakti, even with the, all the past karmas, they get destroyed. You don't have to experience the reactions. So in order to not destroy the opinions of these jnanis, Krishna makes even the devotees go through old age and disease. So these are the three reasons. If their opinions get destroyed, it is a little difficult to understand, but what I will say is that if you read 11th canto, 29th chapter, last verse, purport, Shukadeva Goswami says that Krishna spoke the Uddhava Gita after extracting the essence of the Vedic wisdom. Just like a bumblebee extracts the essence of the flower. Essence of the flower is honey. But when a bumblebee extracts the essence of the flower, the honey, in extracting the essence of the flower, it does not destroy the other inferior parts of the flower. So similarly, when Krishna establishes the essence of the Vedic wisdom, that is the path of pure devotional service, he does not destroy the other inferior paths mentioned in the Vedic scriptures. Other inferior paths are path of karma, path of jnana, path of ashtanga yoga. They are all inferior paths. So he establishes the essence of the Vedic wisdom without actually destroying the inferior paths. So the point is that suppose if a devotee, that means the point is that we don't see miracles in the life of a devotee. The devotee may be pure devotee, may be practicing pure bhakti, but Krishna does not unnecessarily manifest some miracles in the life of a devotee. So he makes the devotee also go through like a normal person, just so that the opinion of other people, other jnanis and karmas, not get destroyed, because Krishna does not there are other paths, the path of jnana and karma. So they are meant for people who are following the gradual path of perfection. So some people will be qualified for the direct path of devotional service, and there are other people who only follow the gradual path. So if they lose their faith on the gradual path, then they will go down only to the path of adharma. So therefore, in order that other people don't get the lose faith in the other gradual paths of jnana and karma, so Krishna does not actually manifest some, like in the form of miracles in the life of a devotee. In the sense, a devotee is practicing devotional service, there is no old age, there is no disease. Only in certain cases, like the Ajamil cases, the Yamadutas came. No, even if they see the miracle, because simply by seeing miracle, one cannot come to bhakti. Because when there are people like Duryodhan, he saw the power of Krishna. So he saw the power of Krishna, but still he didn't come to bhakti. So many people witness the miracles. They don't, in order to come to bhakti, you need to actually come in contact with the association of a devotee. So simply by the miracles, we cannot come to bhakti. That is why devotees also. I was hearing, I think, one lecture of Maharaj. He also mentions that devotees also, they also have mystic powers. They may have certain pure devotees, they may have mystic powers, but they don't exhibit those mystic powers. Because if they exhibit the mystic powers, then common people will only be attracted to the mystic powers. They will not be attracted to the message which the devotees are giving. So simply by the miracles, one may say that if the devotees, if they don't get old age and disease, the others will be attracted. So it does not happen like that. And also Krishna wants to keep the path of bhakti confidential. So it is a little difficult to understand, but you can just accept in due course of time, you will understand. We will go through the chapter and then we will take the questions. But at least you understand these two reasons why the devotees still go to old age and disease. Is that to maintain the confidentiality of the path of bhakti and for increasing their longing. If you don't understand the other reason, it is all right. So we will just go through the remaining verses so that we'll recite together. Tarava kimna jivanti bastra kimna swashantyaha na kadanti na meghanti kim grame pashavo pare.
Do the trees not live? Do the bellows of the blacksmith not breathe? All around us, do the beasts not eat and discharge semen?
So here Shukadev Goswami is saying, why he is speaking this verse is that the materialistic person, Prabhupada writes in the purport, the materialistic person of the modern age will argue that life is not meant for some theological discussions. It is simply meant to actually enjoy. So one should simply actually enjoy the life as far as possible. Economic development is the goal of life. Life is not meant for tapasya. One may think like that. But Shukadev Goswami is saying that actually even the trees live. Trees have a long life. The materialistic person wants to prolong his life, but the trees have a much longer life. And the living entity, materialistic person wants to breathe properly and live a longer life. But even the do the bellows of the blacksmith not breathe? And in fact, the living entity, materialistic person wants to enjoy sex life. But Shukadev Goswami is saying that even the other animals, do they not eat and do they not actually discharge semen, enjoy sex life? So therefore, life is not meant for simply to do eating, mating, sleeping and defending. It is meant for discussing Krishna Katha. So that is the mood of this particular verse. Huh? Sorry. Shaunakadi Rishis are saying. I'm sorry, can't confuse. So all these verses are spoken by Shaunakadi Rishis. So Shaunakadi Rishis, the essential mood is that they want to hear more discussion which took place between Shukadev Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj. They are asking this to Suta Goswami. And in order to express their eagerness, how they want to hear more Krishna Katha, they talked about the how the speaker Shukadev Goswami was elevated and Parikshit Maharaj was also elevated. So therefore, they must have discussed more Krishna Katha. We want to hear that. And then they said that please do not delay the discussion of Krishna Katha because lifespan will reduce if we don't spend our time in Krishna Katha. And then this verse they are saying that life is like not meant for eating, mating, sleeping and defending, because the other animals can perform these activities. In other species one can perform better. Life is meant for discussing Krishna Katha. So now, 19th verse. Shvavidvara hostrakarai samstuta purusha pashuhu nayat karna pato peto jatu namagada grajaha.
Men who are like dogs, hogs, camels and asses, praise those men who never listen to transcendental pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna, the deliverer of evils.
So here, you'll see, now the in this 19th verse, the Shaunakadi Rishis are saying that those people who do not spend their time in Krishna Katha, who do not actually spend their time in hearing Krishna Katha, these people are only praised by other men who are like dogs, hogs, camels and asses. They are criticizing those who are not actually discussing Krishna Katha. So there is a detailed description Prabhupada gives about the nature of dogs, hogs, asses and camels. You can actually go through the purport, but few points I will highlight. So how the dogs actually run here and there for food. Similarly, dog-like people, after finishing their education, they go to different people for getting their jobs. They put applications for interviews. They are going to different places. And sometimes they are rejected. Oh, there is no vacancy here. So people reject the dogs. So he's highlighting like that. As dogs are negligible animals and serve the master faithfully for bits of bread, a man serves a master faithfully without sufficient rewards. And hogs are mainly known for eating habits. They eat stool. Similarly, hog-like people, instead of eating the foodstuffs which are meant for the human beings, they eat actually some abominable foodstuffs. And camels actually, they eat the thorn, and when they eat the thorn, blood comes from their teeth, and then they feel, oh, what a tasty blood. So they are eating their own blood, but they are relishing the taste. So similarly, he says that camel-like people are those people who are enjoying sex life, but actually enjoying sex life, they are sucking one's own blood. To enjoy sex life is to suck one's own blood, and there is not much more to be explained in this connection. It's a very graphic purport. I remember, when you were studying in the college, once Isulnas Radhanath Swami Maharaj came. That time he gave a very graphic lecture on this verse. In Shyamcharan Prabhu's house, he gave the lecture. So camels are enjoying their own blood. And also he says that great business magnates, industrialists work very hard to earn money by different ways and eat the thorny results of their actions mixed with their own blood. And finally, asses, they work very hard, but for others' benefit, and they don't get any benefit. So similarly, ass-like people, they are working very hard for political work and different this one, but they hardly get any benefit. So there is a nice purport in the last section of the 163rd page. There is no harm in trying for political emancipation or economic development, but one should not forget the real aim of life. All such philanthropic activities must be detailed in returning to Godhead. So in this way, Prabhupada is giving a very detailed purport. So Vishnu Chakra Thakur is saying that the animals praise such a person in four ways. They're animalistic. So these people who do not hear the Krishna Katha, they are glorified profusely by dogs, pigs, camels and donkeys. So Prabhupada says that the animal-like persons glorify. Vishnu Chakra Thakur writes in the purport, the animals, these animals only glorify this person. How do these animals glorify? They say that, oh, this person, he has accepted the quality of all of us four animals. Whereas, we are incapable of taking up even one of the another animal's qualities. And then these animals glorify, oh, this person who is not spending the time in hearing Krishna Katha, although he is a human, he can take up the so many qualities of animals. But we being animals cannot take up even one quality of another animal. And then they say that, well, this person as a human being, he is not actually following dharma, he is overstepping the dharma and he accepts our qualities with passion. But however, we animals, we are fixed in our own qualities according to our destiny. We are not trying to be camel or ass or a donkey. We are only in our own position. And this person is aware of the hell into which he will be born, whereas we are dull-witted. But although he is aware, he is still actually following that path. Like that he says. So now, after actually criticizing the whole person in the 19th verse, from 20th to 22nd verse, the Shaunakadi Rishis are criticizing the different bodily parts of the person who is not engaging hearing Krishna Katha. So they are actually, so they criticize the whole person in the 19th verse. Now in the three verses, they criticize the ears which do not engage in hearing Krishna Katha. So 20th verse, they say that the ears which do not hear the glories of Krishna Katha, that is like the holes of a snake. And they also criticize the tongue which is not engaged in speaking Krishna Katha. It is like the croaking of a frog, or it is like the unchaste prostitute. So the ears and the tongue are criticized in the 20th verse. So we'll recite the verse, because it's a beautiful verse. Bilebaturu krama vikramanye nashinvata karna pute narasya jikvasati dardurikeva suta nachopagaya turgaya gata.
One who has not listened to the message about the prowess and marvelous acts of personality of Godhead and has not sung or chanted loudly the worthy songs about the Lord is to be considered to possess ear holes like holes of snakes and a tongue like the tongue of a frog.
So Prabhupada has written a nice purport about hearing, how he says that everything is how one should actually use one's intelligence and logic to understand the spiritual subject matters. The Chaitanya Charitamrita said that one should receive the teaching of the Lord Chaitanya with intellect and full senses so that one can logically understand the great mission. And then he talks about the second paragraph, he talks about the tongue. The word asati means a woman who has become a prostitute. A prostitute has no reputation for good womanly qualities. Similarly, the tongue which is given to the human being for chanting the Vedic hymns will be considered a prostitute when engaged in chanting some mundane nonsense. Next verse. Bharaparam pattakirita jushtam apyuttamangam nanamen mukundam shavan karauna kurute sapariyam harer lasat kanchana kankanauva.
The upper portion of the body, though crowned with a silk turban, is only a heavy burden if not bowed down before the personality of Godhead, who can award mukti, freedom. And the hands, though decorated with glittering bangles, are like those of a dead man if not engaged in the service of the personality of Godhead Hari.
So in this verse, they are criticizing the head which does not bow down to the Lord, and the hands which do not engage in the service of the Lord. The head which does not bow down to the Lord, even though the head may be decorated with a nice crown or a turban, that when he is not engaged in, when does not bow down to the Lord, he is actually going into the ocean of material existence. So when a person is drowning in a river or a ocean, and if the head is having more weight, then what will happen? He will drown faster. So that is what he is saying. And also the hands which do not engage in the service of the Lord, they become the hands of a, even if the hand may be decorated nicely, they are like the hands of a dead man. So we can see here, Prabhupada writes a purport how Prataprudra Maharaj engaged his hands in actually sweeping the pathway. By the simple act, he attained perfection. So the common man, if he has no time to worship the Lord, may at least engage his hands for a few seconds in washing or sweeping the Lord's temple. And then he gives the example of Prataprudra Maharaj. So here, so you'll see in these purports, 21st and 22nd, Prabhupada talks about deity worship, because we engage the head in offering obeisances in front of the deity. So there is the common man who is expected to become at least a third class devotee is advised herein to visit the temple of the Lord and bow down before the deity, even though he may be a very rich man or even a king with a silk turban or a crown. So next verse. Barhayate te nayane naranam lingani vishnor nanirikshato ye padau nrnam tau drumajanma bajau kshetrani nanu vrajato hareryau.
The eyes, why do not look at the symbolic representation of the personality of Godhead, his form, name, quality, etc., are like those printed on the plumes of peacock. And the legs, which do not move to the holy places where the Lord is remembered, are considered to be like tree trunks.
So the eyes which do not look at the form of the Lord. So therefore Prabhupada highlights very much on the deity worship. So those eyes are like the eyes in a peacock plumes, peacock feather. And those legs which do not move to the holy places are considered to be like tree trunks. So there is this purport is a very important purport where Prabhupada emphasizes about deity worship along with hearing and chanting. And especially he mentions that for the householders, deity worship is necessary. Otherwise, there is a sure shot fall down. Engagement in such worship of the deity under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master will greatly help the householders to purify their very existence and make rapid progress in spiritual knowledge. Simple theoretical book knowledge is not sufficient for a neophyte devotee. So you see, Prabhupada's program is not just engaging our knowledge acquiring senses, hearing and chanting, but we should also have engagement for practical services. That means like doing some physical services. So there should be a physical service plus hearing and chanting. So deity worship gives opportunity for physical services. It's not just directly, not only the direct worship of the deity, but in terms of like, say, backup service or making garlands or going and buying flowers and making actually arrangements for the festival, cleaning the temple. So all these, even those who are not Brahman initiated, the people get opportunity for physical services. So there are many places, even in the, I think, Madhavendrapuri's pastime, Prabhupada says that simply theoretical book knowledge is not sufficient, but there, one should also engage in practical worship of the deities. Means like one should engage one's working senses in the service of the Lord. So there is Bhagavad Vidhi and Pancharatrika Vidhi. When a person follows both, then a person can make steady progress. Prabhupada writes in one purport in fourth canto. And also, even in the Bhagavad Gita 12th chapter, Vishnu Chakotakur says that one who engages his physical senses, that means the working senses and the knowledge acquiring senses, both in the service of the Lord, he is considered to be the topmost devotee. So sometimes, because sometimes when we only focus on hearing and chanting or studying, if we neglect the physical activities, at least as long as the energy is there in the body, we should utilize the physical senses in the service of the Lord. And especially for the householders, why it is emphasized deity worship is that householders are they are more exposed to the material energy. In terms of dealing with different men for earning money. So, and also there is a tendency for, because there is a tendency for sense gratification, so therefore it is emphasized that they should engage the physical senses in worshipping the deity. So Prabhupada writes here that book knowledge is theoretical, whereas the archana process is practical. So spiritual knowledge must be developed by a combination of theoretical and practical knowledge. And that is the guaranteed way for attainment of spiritual perfection. The training of devotional service for a neophyte devotee completely depends on the expert spiritual master who knows how to lead his disciple to make gradual progress towards the path back home, back to Godhead. And then another benefit of deity worship is that by taking darshan of the Lord, by engaging our physical senses in the service of the Lord, it protects a person from attractions to mundane cinemas, mundane movie songs, and other hellish attractions. So recently, I think Shyamanand Prabhu in the temple, he was sharing in a Brahmachari class. So he was saying that, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj told him that, always make sure that you do some physical services. Because hearing and chanting definitely purifies, but especially engaging in physical services, that will actually protect us from the lusty desires. Because we have the tendency for passion is there, so that passion has to be utilized in doing some physical services. So Shamanantra was explaining that, he was mentioning, recollecting that point, that one should, at least as long as the strength is there in the body, we should utilize our, to some different extent, in some aspect, we should engage our physical senses in the service of the Lord. So that point is Prabhupada is highlighting here. Only attention engaged in the service of the Lord, especially in dressing and decorating the temple, accompanied by musical kirtan and spiritual instruction from scriptures, can save the common man from the hellish cinema attractions and rubbish sex songs broadcast everywhere by radios. So, and then he also explains how the different people have the traveling tendencies. So traveling industry is a great industry. So the traveling tendency should be detailed for visiting the holy places. So that is another point which Prabhupada writes. But when a person visits the holy places, one should not go with a sightseeing in mind. But one must go to the temples and sanctified places, immortalized by the transcendental pastimes of the Lord and guided by the proper men who know the signs. So next verse. Jivan shavo bhagavatangri renum najatu martyo bilabeta yastu Shri Vishnu Padya Manujastulasya Shvasan Shavoyastuna Veda Gandam.
The person who has not at any time received the dust of the feet of the Lord's pure devotee upon his head is certainly a dead body. And the person who has never experienced the aroma of the tulsi leaves from the lotus feet of the Lord is also a dead body, although breathing.
So now, in the 20th to 22nd verse, different bodily parts of the person who did not engage that bodily part in the devotional service were criticized. In the 23rd verse, all the parts of the body are collectively criticized together. A person who has not taken the dust of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, he is like a dead body or a ghost. Or one who has never experienced the aroma of tulsi leaves from the lotus feet of the Lord is also a dead body, although breathing. Yeah, of course, this we can say that he has not engaged the nostril. But in the criticism, only the nostril is not mentioned. Previously, the ears are like the snake hole, it is mentioned. But here, they are not criticizing only the nostril. They are saying the entire body is like a dead body or a ghostly body. So Prabhupada writes that ghosts are always very bad elements, always creating a fearful situation for others. Similarly, the ghost-like non-devotees who have no respect for the pure devotees, nor for the deity in the temple, create a fearful situation for the devotees at all times. So therefore, he says that the first thing in progress in devotional service is to be a servant of a pure devotee. Reception of the dust of the lotus feet of pure devotee, that is the way of pure disciplic succession. And he quotes this verse spoken by Maharaj Jadabharat to Rahugan. Rahugunaita tapasana yati na chejaya nirvapanad grahadva na chandasa naiva jalagni surya vina mahatpada rajobhishekam. One cannot attain perfection by simply by performing austerities by within the fire or within the water or performing sannyas duties, but only by getting the dust of the lotus feet of the Lord. And then finally he says, there is a very beautiful section of the purport in the second paragraph. Says that in Vrindavan, all the pure devotees pray for the mercy of Srimati Radharani, the pleasure potency of Krishna. And Srimati Radharani is a tender-hearted, feminine counterpart of the Supreme Whole, resembling the perfectional stage of the worldly feminine nature. Therefore, the mercy of Srimati Radharani is available very readily to the sincere devotees. And once she recommends such a devotee to Krishna, the Lord at once accepts the devotee's admittance into his association. The conclusion is therefore that one should be more serious about seeking the mercy of the devotee than that of the Lord directly. So next verse. Tadashmasaram hridayam batedam yadgrihyamanair harinama deyai na vikriyeta tayada vikaro netre jalam gatra ruheshu harshah.
Certainly, that heart is still framed, which, in spite of one's chanting the holy name of the Lord with concentration, does not change when ecstasy takes place. Tears fill the eyes and hair stands on end.
So this is a very important verse of this chapter. So after criticizing the different bodily parts and the entire body, in this verse, they are criticizing the internal sense organs, internal nature of the person who is completely indifferent to the Lord's glories. So, tadashmasaram hridayam batedam. A person, even after hearing or chanting the glories of the Lord, if his internal heart is, if the person's heart does not melt in ecstasy, if the tears do not come from his eyes, that means his heart is considered to be steel framed. Tad ashmasaram hridayam batedam. So this is, that means the main theme of this verse is that So there should be a real transformation in the heart. Transformation in the heart. So that transformation is explained in the form of actually, the transformation is exhibited in the form of actually shedding tears. But of course, the Prabhupada and Vishnu Chakra Thakur has given a very long purport that Prabhupada writes that suppose if a person is hearing and chanting for a long time, but still, if tears do not come from his eyes, then the reason must be, it must be only due to aparad or offenses. If there is no change in the heart, the shedding of the tears is an external manifestation of the change in the heart. So what Prabhupada is saying, if there is no transformation of the heart, even after hearing and chanting, that means a person must be committing offenses. One has to rectify those offenses. It may be only due to aparad. This is the opinion of the Sandarbha. And what do we say, like when we say that there should be a change in the heart after hearing and chanting? What is the change in the heart? It means that basically detachment from the lording it over mentality and attachment to Krishna. The detachment from material sense gratification, attachment to Krishna, that externally may manifest as shedding of the tears. So sometimes a devotee in the association of non-devotees, he may not actually manifest the shedding of the tears. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he met Ramananda Rai, when the both of them embraced together and they started shedding tears, but then when they realized that other Brahmanas, other caste conscious Brahmanas, they were getting bewildered why a sannyasi is embracing some ordinary kayastha or grahastha, they were getting bewildered. So immediately Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Rai, they suppressed their ecstatic symptoms. They suppress that ecstatic symptoms. So that means that the external symptoms in the form of the shedding of the tears may not be exhibited by a pure devotee because of being surrounded by certain non-devotees or common people who will not be able to appreciate that. But the internal, the real transformation of the heart is actually to be free from the lording it over material nature and to be attached to Krishna. And so the Vishnu Chakra Thakur and Prabhupada, they say that, how do we know whether actually the transformation of the heart has taken place? If the shedding of the tears, because the shedding of the tears can be imitated even by a common person, by some practice. This the Ashtasatvika Vikar, the eight symptoms of ecstasy, shedding of the tears, trembling of the body, or dancing, different symptoms are explained. So they can be imitated even by a common person. So if we go by these Ashtasatvika Vikar, then we can mistake an advanced devotee to be an ordinary person because he may not exhibit those symptoms. And we may mistake an ordinary person to be an advanced devotee who may be imitating those symptoms. So what are the reliable symptoms of a person who has actually undergone transformation of the heart? That is the nine symptoms of Bhava Bhakti. Avyartha Kalatvam, that means one does not waste a single moment. Shanti, and Shanti means perseverance. And Namagane Sadaruchi, attachment to hearing the glories of the Lord. Preetistat Vasatistale, attachment to the holy places of the Lord. And Mana Shunyata, that there's complete absence of pride. And Virakti, complete detachment. So these symptoms will not be, an advanced devotee will not hide these symptoms. And a common person cannot imitate these symptoms. This cannot be hidden by advanced devotee because he will always spend his time in some activity of devotional service, avyartha kalatvam. But a common person, he cannot imitate all the time, 24 hours being engaged. He may imitate the symptoms of maybe shedding tears. But if he starts imitating, 24 hours doing something related to devotional service, I can't do that, he will get bored after some time. That cannot be imitated by a common person. Mana shunyata, complete absence of bride, that cannot be imitated by a common person. Common person will feel that pinch of false ego, he will get insulted when others actually maybe become angry or others insult him. But an advanced devotee, even when others insult him, because of the absence of pride, he will not get disturbed. So these nine symptoms of Bhava Bhakti are the reliable symptoms. And they cannot be imitated by a common person. So therefore, he is talking about the real change in the heart. So therefore, this verse is about the the whole process of spiritual culture is aimed at changing the heart of the living being in the matter of eternal relation with the Supreme Lord as a subordinate servant, which is his eternal constitutional position. So with the progress of devotional service, the reaction of change in the heart is exhibited by gradual detachment from the sense of material enjoyment. So it is a gradual process. And another thing which I just want to mention is that, so this imitation of the ecstatic symptoms, that is like shedding of the tears or trembling of the body, Rupa Goswami explains they are also into four types. So sometimes a person who has not undergone a transformation of the heart, he may still exhibit the ecstatic symptom. There are four types. So one is called as Rati Abhasa. So Rati Abhasa means, because of proximity to a genuine ecstatic devotee, a person may exhibit ecstatic symptoms. And one may say that, oh, I attended that kirtan, I went into ecstasy. Sometimes devotees say. So that is because some very highly advanced devotee, when they are leading the kirtan, sometimes others also get influenced by that. So it is not because he is actually in the platform, it's not that he has undergone the transformation of the heart, because of proximity to a advanced devotee. That is Rati Abhasa. And second is Sattvika Abhasa. That means sometimes they have an emotional disposition. Because of emotional disposition, when they come to maybe some kirtan or when they come to hear Krishna Katha, and they start crying. So they have an emotional disposition. So even when they would go and watch some movie, when some hero is beaten up by a villain, that time also they will cry. When India loses a cricket match, that time also they cry. And when they come to Krishna Katha, that time also they cry. Because they have emotional disposition. So because of an emotional disposition, they seem to exhibit ecstatic symptom. That is called a Sattvika Abhasa. And then third is called as Pratipa. Pratipa is that sometimes a person is not in proximity to a great devotee, or he does not even have an emotional disposition, but still a person may exhibit ecstatic symptoms because of the powerful influence of Krishna Katha. So sometimes a hard-hearted logician, even he may also cry because of the powerful influence of Krishna Katha. He has not undergone a transformation of the heart, but he starts crying sometimes when he hears Krishna Katha. So that is the powerful influence of Krishna Katha. Rupa Goswami calls it as Pratipa. Pratipa. And then the fourth is called as Nissatva. So Nissatva is that sometimes people exhibit ecstatic symptoms because of the prayer practice. They practice beforehand and then they come. So one person, he saw that Haridas Thakur is actually attracting so many people. Then he also practiced. Haridas Thakur, sometimes he would go into ecstasy. So he also practiced how to actually exhibit such symptoms. And then once he came in front of the public, he also started exhibiting those ecstatic symptoms by prayer practice. So that is like Nissatva. So these are all actually different types of Sattvika Abhasa. So there are Ashta Sattvika Vikar, the eight symptoms of ecstasy. But sattvika abhasa is that basically the semblance of ecstatic symptoms. They are into four categories. So these categories are exhibited, these are exhibited without the genuine transformation of the heart. Rati abhasa, sattvika abhasa, pratipa and nissatva. So but the real transformation, the genuine reliable symptoms of transformation of the heart is the those nine symptoms of bhava bhakti. Avyartha kalatvam, shanti, virakti, manashunyata, namagane sadaruchi. So Prabhupada, that is why he writes in the purport about the how the prakrita sakajiyas imitate the symptoms, then how to detect those sakajiyas. Because they are also, we can detect those sakajiyas because they are also attached to sense gratification. So that means they have not exhibited the symptom of virakti. So these are the reliable symptoms. And then he gives the example of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Rai. So therefore, he concludes the purport by saying, a complete progressive march and the return path back home, back to Godhead, will depend on the instructions of revealed scriptures directed by a realized devotee. And then finally, the sages, the Shaunakadi Rishis, are concluding this chapter by saying that, your words are very pleasing to our minds. Please therefore explain this to us as it was spoken by the great devotee Shukadeva Goswami, who is very expert in transcendental knowledge and spoke to Parishit Maharaj upon being asked. So in this way, the Shaunakadi Rishis are expressing their eagerness to hear what all subject matters were discussed between Parishit Maharaj and Shukadeva Goswami. And in order to express their eagerness, they criticize those people who are not spending their time in discussing Krishna Katha, who are not engaging their senses in the different services of the Lord. So I'll stop here. I think if anybody has any questions, we'll take personally. Acha, where does it come? Reference? This is from Nectar of Devotion. Sattvika Abhasa. There's four types of Sattvika Abhasa. This is on the Nectar of Devotion. Chapter number, I have to check the chapter number. In the second part of Nectar of Devotion, there are five waves. That is Vibhava, Anubhava, the five components of Rasa. That's explained. That the third component is actually Sattvika Bhava. In the Sattvika Bhava, he explains that. Second part of Nectar of Devotion. We can read page number, 232. In the Nectar of Devotion. Whichever chapter it is. Page number 232.
Hari Bol. Previous chapter, second chapter, from that, 8th question for 5 marks. 8 number ka question, 5 mark. Then, 3rd chapter, question first for 15 marks. Then, question second for 10 marks. And 4th question for 20 marks. Question number 8, 1, 2 and 4. Hare Krishna.